The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. 10 minutes after 8. Just a pleasure this morning to talk about something that's not having to do with the election, okay? I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to have a... You know how we talk about palate cleansing conversations? This would be one of them. And joining me in studio right now, we have Kristen Pugh, and also Philip Yates. And it's with Rogue Valley Farm to School. Isn't that right? And why don't we talk with you first here, Kristen? It's a pleasure having you in here.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Philip, it's great to see you. Now, the last time I spoke with you, you were retiring out of Access, right?
I was, and I've been retired for a while now, yes.
You can't stay away from the food thing, can you?
You know, I thought I could, but then I realized I couldn't. Interestingly enough, I was relating back to when I began with Farm to School. It was like 3.5 years ago, and it was COVID, the middle of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And also the fire just happened, too. So Farm to School was involved in delivering food directly to people from mm-hmm. local farms. So it seemed like a really great step for me to step into. It was the same kind of work in a way, but developing the interests, particularly working with kids, was exciting for me.
All right, very good. Kristen, why don't you tell me about what the whole mission of Rogue Valley Farm to School is all about? Could you do that?
Yeah. So basically, in a nutshell, we connect kids to their local food systems, teach them about gardening, where it comes from, mm-hmm. nutrition, the full gamut. And then we also connect local farms to cafeterias and trying to improve the quality of school meals through increasing the amount of local food served on each tray.
And how long have you been running this?
This started 15 years ago.
Have you been with it the whole 15 years?
No, unfortunately, I have not. I've been here for, I'm 2.5 years in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. 15-year anniversary then.
That
you're going to be celebrating it. What got it started? What was the, the germ of this?
Yeah, it was started by a group of really dedicated parents and volunteers and a few teachers mm-hmm. who were seeing that kids really weren't having the opportunity to see where their food came from and interact with the natural world. And so they started it as a pumpkin tour is what they called it. And they would take kids out to a pumpkin patch at Eagle Mill Farm. And they would get to work, harvest things on a local farm, see where their food came from, taste directly from the fields, and they saw how impactful that was for the kids, and it just kept growing.
Yeah, I imagine it's sometimes a challenge, Philip. I kind of direct this one to you, in which kids think that fruit comes from a fruit roll-up machine. You ever get that?
I do. I also remember a TV program in England where they asked the child, where does milk come from? He said, well, you chop the cow in half, and you pour the milk out.
Yeah.
It's hard.
That's why
it's so important for us to be able to teach our kids.
Now, here is the challenge as I see this. So you want to connect kids to, okay, this is where food really comes from. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
All right. It doesn't come from styrofoam it doesn't even come from the co-op or anything else. I mean, there has to be sourcing to this. Is it about getting people more involved in agriculture too, or I'm just, I don't want to put words in your mouth here. I'm just trying to figure out what your whole mission is.
Yeah. So there's definitely an angle where kids are getting excited about agriculture and mm-hmm. about food systems and different types of food jobs and positions in our society. There's also an angle where kids are really not having access to these fresh foods at home because there's so much food insecurity happening right now. And if
where is the food insecurity? Because, and the reason I bring this up, I'm just going to talk anecdotally, right? Because has the Rogue Valley ever been fatter, right? And now I'm saying this as someone who has been fluffy all his life, okay? All right, I get this, but people have there can't be a food procurement problem. Look at the obesity, that we're looking at.
I think if you look at the types of food that are available, that is really where it comes in. And the fresh, locally produced foods are out of reach for many people in the valley. And if you look at you know, a lot of the different places where they are procuring their food, such as food banks and such, there's not a lot of fresh options. So
Agreed.
Kids are not getting, you know, they're not getting experiences of trying four different types of radishes, right? Or seven different types of apples, or them prepared in different ways. And so a lot of times they don't know that they even like a certain type of vegetable until they try it in a certain preparation or a certain varietal of it, because it really does change the taste of what you're eating.
So you're looking to broaden the food horizons, I guess, of children too. Would that be a fair assessment?
I think so, for sure. And we're bringing, you know, education into the schools specifically and working with kids in gardens. I mean, the experience of actually hands-on in the gardens, having instruction and of having stories about what the food provides is really important.
Which schools are you working with at this point, Kristen?
Right now we do our full Digging Deeper partnership, which is weekly garden classes. We do monthly tasting tables in the cafeteria, and then providing the support with farms and cafeteria, recipe development, all the full gamut with all of the elementary schools in Phoenix Talent School District, Central Point School District. And then we help with the procurement of local foods with all of the school nutrition directors in Jackson and Josephine County. And then we run we still run our harvest meal field trips. And last year we brought out 110 classes throughout the year.
Yeah, what's a harvest meal field trip?
So right now we're partnered with Hanley Farm and the farm at SOU. And we bring out kids for a four-hour field trip on the working farm. We split them up into a couple groups. Kids get to harvest. They get to learn about animal husbandry. And then we also have an outdoor kitchen where we teach them scratch cooking skills. And at the end, they have all contributed to a communal meal that they sit down and eat using the ingredients that they harvested in the fields.
I admire what you're doing, because even if you – I think – you know, you would get more people involved in getting a better food supply if more people were actually cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not cooking, and if all you're doing is opening up the Chinese noodle bowl that you got from Costco or wherever else, it's nothing against that. I know everybody does things like that every now and then. But cooking, learning to cook is probably a big driver in learning to be more discerning on food sources.
For sure. I mean, you know, you question obesity in the valley, and there's certainly the types of food that people that can afford to be able to purchase is mostly food that's been heavily
processed.
Processed and such, yeah.
Yeah. And lots of seed oils, too, I would imagine. We could have all sorts of conversation on these kind of things.
So, sugar salts. Yeah.
All right, so... you talk about the procurement for the schools. So are we actually getting schools that are looking to add more of that local flavor to the actual menus?
Absolutely. So,
and give me an example of what you can get, because, you know, agriculture has been under a strain here in Southern Oregon for quite a number of years.
Yeah. So right now, every week we send out to the school nutrition directors a availability list that they can order directly from, or we can help them order whatever they need from it. Mm-hmm. Right now we have about 70 items on that list, everything from apples to jam to different types of meat products, cheeses, all different kinds of things that are being produced.
Coming from local farms around here.
Yeah, we have a list of about, 20 farms are on that list, and we are currently working with another list of about 30 to get them ready to help sell to schools.
Would it be fair that most of this is pretty niche at the moment, kind of a niche market, or not?
You know, we're trying to make it more and more mainstream, absolutely. And the Central Point School District is doing a great job, and so is the Eagle Point School District right now in getting a lot of this local food into their school meals. Last year, we helped schools in the Rogue Valley spend over $200,000 on local food.
Okay. Yeah. Is it affordable? I mean, do you get pushback maybe from the schools that are saying, boy, you know, our budgets are a little tight. You know, we have SNAP money coming into the schools. We're providing free breakfast and lunch and dinner. You know, we really can't do this. What do you tell them?
There is some of that. There are certain programs that help with buying this food. So we work with the Oregon Department of Education, and they have a grant fund that helps that basically gives schools an allotment of money depending on their population, a certain amount throughout the year that they can spend down. And then once they spend that down on local foods, it has to be locally produced foods, then they're eligible for a competitive grant after that. So our region for the biennium has been allotted $400,000, and we've helped spend down two. So we're right on track for this next year. In this last month, we helped them spend $11,000 on local food.
Very good. Kristen Pugh and Philip Yates, Rogue Valley Farm to School is the organization. And I just wanted to make sure people know about the website where you can find out more about this. It's rvfarm2school.org. So you're a nonprofit and you're working this. Is this about developing more of a consistent market for local agriculture, too? I'm just wondering if this could be a side benefit, because I've always been a big fan of us being a little more resilient and not having just marijuana farms and hemp farms. God bless you, you know, if that's what you're running and it's working right now. But in tough times, still, most of our food gets shipped in out of the big mechanized food industry. It's still the San Joaquin Valley for the most part bringing our produce. Isn't that the case? Most of what we're getting here, Philip and Kristen. I don't know who wants to handle
that.
Well,
certainly from outside area, but there is certainly a lot of emphasis from local farmers to be able to increase their production as much as possible. But the struggle has been difficult, for in this area, particularly with water restrictions and such.
With what restrictions?
Water.
Water restrictions.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, so farms that are having difficulty procuring water rights or don't have rights?
There are some. I know one farm in the Applegate area that basically the well ran dry.
Oh, okay.
So natural water consequences of overuse, I would say.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And they're also, speaking to the resiliency aspect, that our local farms are struggling and they do need a larger market to be able to increase their production and be able to become more sustainable as a business model.
And this certainly could be a bit of a market driver, or at least a market steadier, right?
Absolutely. Over 60% of our children in the Rogue Valley eat meals at school every day. So this is a huge market. This is one of the biggest ones in the valley. And so if we can help break into that for our local farmers, it could be a really great partnership.
I would imagine it also is helpful to try to perhaps instill some different eating habits over time, which could be helpful for change, for a healthier change. Would that be fair?
Absolutely.
For sure. And it was straight through Working for Access. We couldn't just hand out food. We had to be able to help people to know how to cook. So that would be really, really important. Yeah. And that was, one of the things that we went out and did was to do a survey specifically countywide to find out what parents were willing to do. And many of them wanted to be able to cook more themselves specifically. But there was problems like time and other things like that too.
Sure. All right. What kind of produce is probably most popular? Is it mostly produce that you're working with, or is there?
We do both produce and meat products. So it just sort of depends on the order. Right now, those little small lunchbox peppers, the ones that look like bell peppers,
oh,
but they're really small.
Yeah.
Those are a hit with the kids.
I love those.
Me too. And they're so fun. You feel like a giant eating a big old bell pepper, but it's really actually tiny. Those are really, really popular with the kids. Tomatoes right now, of course, it's tomato season. So we're getting all different colors of cherry tomatoes and slicers into schools. We just had a huge order for ground beef from Marvin's Gardens out in Rogue River. So really, it just depends what's in season. This month, we do the Harvest of the Month program, and it's apples. So we've procured six different types of apples from different orchards around and are helping schools buy them, too.
The apples will never be better than they are right now, right?
Absolutely.
and do what you can with it. What do you need now to help expand this? Or, what is your status, I guess, of the nonprofit group here? And, where are you hoping to take it?
Yeah, so obviously we're a nonprofit, so we always are needing more public support and funding and things like that. We are excited to be launching family cooking classes with the help of a grant from the Ashland Community Health Foundation. Mm-hmm. So we're really hoping to expand the family connection. All the work that we're doing right now is kind of isolated within the school day, and we all know that sometimes at the end of the day, we don't always hear everything our children did during their school day. So we're trying to create that connection back to the families, as well as continue to do more hands-on recipe development and connection with the schools. Not everybody understands that school cafeterias don't actually always have the equipment needed to scratch cook. A lot of our cafeterias.
Really?
It's a reheat and serve model
that a lot of
the cafeterias around here use.
I didn't know that. Is that a change? Because, I mean, now, I know I'm older than you, okay? I have no doubt about this, but... You know, for me in the late 1960s, I could remember the huge vats, you know, in the school, and there was the, you know, the lunch people with their hairnets and everything else. And here's the huge vat of spinach being boiled into oblivion to be put on my plate, right? You know, the school lunch. Actually, I like boiled spinach. People think I'm a freak when I tell them that, but I actually like it. Everyone else is going, "Ew, seaweed," you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, everything was being cooked at that point.
Yes.
When did that start changing? I don't know. Because if you're saying that everything's been going to more of a reheat, that means that somebody else is actually making the food.
Yes, exactly. So it's being made more in a centralized location. And a few of our larger school districts in the Valley, not all of them, Central Point and Rogue River, are self-operational. So they are still contained within the school district. A lot of the school districts have started in the last maybe 10 or 15 years, contracting out the food service to very large corporations. So Sodexo, Chartwell, these very large food service companies are the ones that are actually have the employees are in the cafeteria creating this food. They have hubs where we're receiving this, you know, pre-made food, basically.
Are you able to work with outside companies to get this in? Gets this local produce and local ingredients in there, in spite of the fact that it is a big outside company actually doing it, or not? Or are you kind of locked down?
We're really excited. So Eagle Point is really the school district that is proving that we can work with larger companies. In this last year, they've been on board doing our Harvest of the Month program and procuring really, really large amounts of local food. So we can work within the system. It just sort of takes a school nutrition director or people saying that this is what we want and being able to work within those systems. It does take a little bit more of finessing. They have to, you know, of course, there's lots of hoops to jump through and different ways that they have to put things into their systems to work. But we're helping them through that, and we are making some strides.
You have a lot of passion for this. I don't think you're doing this because it's making everybody rich. I don't think it is, are you?
No, healthier, we hope.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
okay.
That's it.
Have you seen, or has anybody in the schools that you have been working with, Rogue Valley's Farm to School, has there been any reaction from the school officials saying that, yes, we are seeing it make a difference? And if so, how? Can anybody?
Absolutely.
Can you grab maybe?
Yeah. The Digging Deeper program?
Yeah, so every year we send out a survey to our partner teachers and administrators and things like that and ask, you know, how are we doing? What are the different changes that you're seeing? And they are seeing that children in this program are first much more likely to try new foods, which is really wonderful.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. Yeah. That's the first step,
That's the kind of broadening the horizon.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Question I had earlier. Yeah.
Absolutely. And then they're also seeing a lot of social emotional benefits of being in the garden every week and how oftentimes kids that kind of struggle within the classroom structure are actually really thriving in these outdoor classrooms that we've created in the garden. We bring Common Core standards into our curriculum, into the garden. So we're teaching math and fractions and all of these different, you know, Common Core standards, things that kids have to learn, but in a new project-based way. And we're seeing that kids really are grabbing onto this, and it's definitely helping their teamwork, their self-esteem, as well as their academic progression.
It's kind of like the equivalent of where some people, you know, band ends up being the passion. Other people, it's shop class that keeps them kind of paying attention in the classroom. In this particular case, digging in the garden.
Absolutely.
Right?
Digging
in the garden. And I think maybe there's something about this, Kristen and Phillips, that so much of the world right now, especially the online world, it's so ethereal. It's like it's just out there. You know, in the cloud someplace, and this is something 3D right here. You can feel, touch, smell, and actually see the results of labor, too. I think there's you know, something that he said there.
Yeah,
and caring for something and tending something over its lifetime, right? Like planting a seed and watching it grow and nurturing that and then having it feed you in the end is just such a beautiful cycle.
Yeah, I could have used this back, and because if you look at my lawn, you'll know I can't feed and make anything grow, but wouldn't have worked. But no, there are people. This is really great. I think this is a great deal. Is there do you work with FFA or FHA in any way, or FFA? I guess would be probably the more logical thing, or is it mostly directly connecting with the farmers themselves?
So right now, we are working directly with the farmers, and we're working with elementary schools, which typically don't have like 4-H or FFA or any of that. There are some really wonderful, robust programs in the middle school and high school levels for this type of work. And so we're really seeing that the elementary schools is where they're really not getting that opportunity currently, and that's where we step in.
Okay. And where do you see the growth? And Philip, we're... Kristen, either one of you can handle this one. Where do you see the growth coming or the potential? If because, you know, you're in a few schools here right now, and it sounds like the people that are using you are happy with this. Where would you like to see it?
I would love to see all the children, all of our students in the Rogue Valley have opportunities to have a school garden, garden classes, and fresh food available on a daily basis in a scratch-cooked meal, every single meal that they're provided at school.
Yeah. Probably be a little more expensive, honestly, wouldn't it?
It can be, but they're doing it. You know, Central Point is an incredible school district, and they are being held up. Their food service is being held up statewide as one of the best because they scratch cook all of their bread using whole wheat flour that has been milled in Eugene. They're procuring the largest amount of local foods for their meals. You look at their salad bar and it is just amazing. It's beautiful. It's something that, like, as I'm in the cafeteria, I'm like, hey, can I have a plate? You know, I mean, it's stuff that you really want to eat. And school districts are seeing that the better, more delicious looking food that they're putting out, the more kids are wanting to participate in that program. And of course, they're being reimbursed for those meals. And it can actually be a value add for the school districts. So
rather than the stereotypical glop, you know, that people would talk about in the past.
And ultimately, I think kids can be healthier. I mean, you know, given if they are able to access more fresh foods specifically, that will help them in the long run, especially in those early years where it's so important in the development years to be able to have those kinds of foods.
Is RV farm to school, is it strictly organic, or is it all sorts of different farming methods? How do you work that?
So currently we don't have any stipulation where you have to be organic. Mm-hmm. It's happenstance that most of our local farms here are doing regenerative biodynamic organic practices. So we are bringing a lot of that food into the schools, but we don't have a specific bar where they have to meet, you know, certain standards or have certifications.
And are they growing in number at this point? Because like I said, I know that pressure from the marijuana and hemp industry, I think, took a lot of farms out of contention for a while. And I don't know if that's starting to rebuild yet or not. Any comment on that?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics about farms and how the development is. I know that we are a part of the Rogue Valley Food System Network.
So I think, you know, even beyond the hemp and marijuana and all of the different farmland, really it's
it was kind of a gold rush there for a little while, and then it's now kind of now what? Okay, a lot of that has been abandoned, I think.
Right, and a lot of that farmland is now turned into more hobby farms, right, where people just want a little bit of space around their house. They want to be able to grow a couple tomato plants and have a tractor. So there is definitely within the last, you know, 15, 20 years, I grew up in the Valley, and there was so much farmland being, you know, highly productive. And now a lot of that has been turned into nicer homes or lots and things like that. And I would say that's a bigger effect on the farmland right now.
That's interesting. I've always kind of scratched my head about this, even how we've decided where to plan, you know, communities at some point. You look at what's, I mean, Central Point, you look at all, so much of that housing which has gone in Central Point was some of the primest farmland in the entire valley. I'm just astounded that we just say, this is where we're going to put housing.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's a testament to that we need to figure out better, bigger markets for our local farmers so they don't feel the economic pressure to have to sell off the land and do these things, that it's a true viable livelihood.
It has
right?
to be a viable, like, a viable job. It has to pay.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And so that's why these larger institutional markets like schools, hospitals, food and friends, like all of these mechanisms that are feeding our valley, if we can get them on board with fresh local produce, that could be a huge value add for our local farmers.
All right. Now, if someone's listening and this is something they're passionate about, how can they help you? What can they do?
Well, you can visit our website at our www.rvfarm2school.org. You can, of course, make a monetary donation. We're always looking for volunteers as well, and we're looking for more farms to help and put on our availability list. So we're always wanting to connect with the community and see how they want to plug in, and we're more than happy to have extra hands to help.
Very good. Kristen Pugh, Philip Yates, thank you so much for having come in this morning. And so great running into you the other day, Philip.
It was great, yeah. I had to stop. Yeah. Bill.
And so great to see you both doing some great work here. And I think this is a positive move. And I'm glad to find out more. Here it is. It's been going on 15 years. I'm just finding out about it now. Oh, well.
Thanks so much for having us.
Now I won't have any excuse for not knowing about it, okay? Thanks, Kristen.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
It's 8:35. You're on KMED and KBXG.
Rule number one, if you're looking to sell a home, choose a local real estate agent. Hey, it's Lars. And why? It starts with an overall knowledge of the area. But even more importantly, a local agent is a friend and neighbor who cares about the community just as much as you do. In the Medford area, that'd be my good friend Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty. Jared's a native of the Pacific Northwest, and his wife, Colette, is a former Oregon Young Mother of the Year. The Hokansons love Southern Oregon so much, they decided to raise their family there. If you're thinking of selling, Jared Hokanson guarantees to sell your home. And if he can't get it sold at a price and deadline you both agree to, Jared will buy it himself. Some restrictions do apply. Find out what your property is worth for free and instantly. 541-772-SOLD.com. Call Jared today at 541-772-SOLD. That's 541-772-7653. Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty.
Joel here from Butler Ford and Truck Center, and I got a couple unbeatable Joel specials on Ford trucks this month. Number one special is an all-new F-150 4x4 for only $377 a month. It's a 36-month lease, which means you get to drive it for 3 years, come back, and trade it in on a new one for only $377 a month for a Ford F-150 4x4. Hey, pay a little more per month, and you can supersize your Ford truck to F-350 four-wheel drive diesel. That's only $555 a month for a 36-month lease, and that's my second truck special this month. When you think Ford, I want you to think Butler Ford. Come down and see me in Ashland, because no one knows how to make a better deal on new Ford F-150 Super Duty or SUV than me. That's probably why Butler Ford is the highest Google-rated Ford dealership in Oregon. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes down the freeway in Ashland, right off of exit 19, where we got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned, and super low payment.
36-month leases for $7,500 cash or trade due at signing, excluding tax, license, title, 250 dealer dock fee on stock numbers 598.35 and selling price of 51.72 and stock number 59.809 and selling price of 69.710. After all rebates and discounts on approved credits and Ford credit finance, see dealer for details.
If you're looking for a fun, informative 2 hours on the weekend, Sunday afternoons at 2, check out RadioLawTalk.com. It's a roundtable of seasoned attorneys talking over the latest legal controversies and decisions and the news. Test your legal brain on is it a case or no case. Get the insider's take on situations, cases, and some legal celebrity gossip, too. RadioLawTalk.com, sponsored by Reed Law Firm. If you've been injured, don't be a victim twice. Visit ReedLawFirm.com and RadioLawTalk.com, Sundays at 2 on KMED.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
838-770-5633, 770-KMED. Just got a text message from my daughter, Sarah and Jake, over in Palm Bay, Florida. And I asked her, I said, anything new to report this morning about she's right in the path of Hurricane Milton, and they're just having to brace for it or buckle down for it, because there is no place to stay. Everything that any place that is in a different city that could be taken is filled up. Now, they're on the eastern half of Florida, so it will be weakened by the time Milton gets to her particular neighborhood. But, boy, right in the path. And she says, nothing new here, just bracing for the impact, and we're making a big crock pot of soup right now. So that's what my daughter's up to right now over in the path of Hurricane Milton. So far, so good. She says that they're kind of worried more about the power being out in her particular neighborhood. Her home was built on reasonably high land for Florida standards, about 20 to 25 feet above sea level. So that's better than many places. But yeah, we're all just a little bit worried seeing this the storm come in. It's a biggie. Let me go to Steve. Hello, Steve. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, it was an interesting discussion about food. My family immigrated here back in the 1800s, and my uncle Otto Bonert and his father John Bonert cleared that land where Twin Creeks, all that stuff is built on now.
And I know it was going to go there. That's where the plan was, but it was some of the finest farmland this area had, from what people are telling me in the agricultural world.
Absolutely. It's that land originally was a swamp, and great-great-grandfather John Bonert and the neighbors, the Hanleys, they dredged the bottom of Jackson Creek and Griffin Creek to lower the water level so they could clear that land, all with horses. And then it was a swamp. There was brush and stuff growing in there. They had to go through and remove all that and then level it to be able to do agriculture. And it was all driven by the economy. I mean, the Hanleys, were there to feed the miners in Jacksonville, and they leveled that land and provided, food for animals a lot. I mean, grain and stuff. The Bonert, Otto was a genius. He invented the process whereby onion seeds were grown commercially, and or beet seeds were, that's what he grew there mostly the last 20 years. And grass seed. He did grass seed also. But he always was looking where the money was. And the reason they finally sold that, because the value of the land was so high and it cost so much to farm it, it wasn't worth doing anymore. Plus, he got old and really couldn't do it, and there wasn't anybody in the family that could run that.
Yeah, that's kind of a sad thing. You know, you think about it, had we been thinking back in the day more about resiliency of being able to feed ourselves rather than having to import everything from the San Joaquin Valley. Perhaps the wiser way, and I know I'm engaging in, 50-50 or 20-20 hindsight, that sort of thing, in which houses, all of our housing or the bulk of our housing should have been built in the foothills all around here, which is not particularly suited for growing much of anything, really.
Yeah, well, that's true. When we had a young family, we lived out on Old Stage Road, and we had 11 acres, and we kind of had a family farm. We had raised beef, and we had a half-acre garden and an orchard and grapes and hayfield. And even with that much stuff, we still had to buy two shopping carts full of food every couple of weeks to feed three kids, especially when they were teenagers.
Yeah, I'll probably have to get Glenn Archambault on to talk about it, because he says that there's really no way that we could really be totally sustainable here in the Rogue Valley, given the way things are set up there right now. But I wouldn't mind, though, having a little more than we do. That's kind of where I'm coming from, Steve. All right. Appreciate the call. Let me go to line three. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello.
Is this me?
Yeah, it sure is. Go ahead.
Hi. I just was going to say thanks for having a great interview there. I think that speaks to so many problems we have going on in our country, frankly, that I was working with those guys 20 years ago and have been doing that type work for 30 years. And
What type of work is that, working with food or farming?
Basically tuning people into local mm-hmm. eating. And that really originally came out of working with people who had heart attacks and helping them really with their diet. That's what it really comes down to, is what we're used to. And it seems like, as we all know, it's difficult to train an old dog new tricks.
But it is possible.
It is possible. And I always found that the adults, even though they were even though they would change. Of course, when you're up against the wall with a heart attack, people would change. But I found that a lot of times people would slip back. But I found with the kids that you know, there is, if you make it fun and exciting, and they really gravitate towards it to the point where, you know, my kids now are in their early 20s and they're very proficient in the garden as well as the kitchen.
Very good. Great story. Thanks for sharing that. It's 844. If you're on hold, I will get right to your call, 770-5633. We'll continue open phones here on The Bill Myers Show, KMED.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Deborah.
And this is our TimberTech story. We built the TimberTech deck. The deck floats into the landscape and looks like real wood. We did it all ourselves.
It was fun to just kind of figure it out, and we're still married.
Still married. TimberTech lets us enjoy a space and an experience that we couldn't ever enjoy before.
Feels like a new lease on our house. It's like a really special place in the yard now.
The Hughes Lumber TimberTech sale is going on now. Come in soon.
News is sponsored by Valley View Nursery, your only nursery with online pricing. Visit valleyviewnursery.com. They're closer than you think.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. You have just shy of a week left to make sure that you're registered to vote for the November 5th general election. The deadline is next Tuesday. If you've moved, changed your mailing address or name, you need to update your registration. Ballots can't be forwarded. Voter registration and updates can be completed online at OregonVotes.gov or go to your county elections office. The trial of Negasi Zuberi is underway. He's accused of abducting two women last year, taking them to his Klamath Falls home and sexually assaulting them. The government's expected to call about 70 witnesses. Zuberi's being held in the Jackson County Jail. The trial in federal court in Medford is expected to last 3 weeks. Oregon voters routinely ranked public education tops of their collective priority list in previous polls and wanted policymakers in Salem to deal with the problem. Well, in a new survey of 500 Oregon residents, only 2% identified education as a top concern, far below homelessness, mental health, and the cost of housing and living. Bill Lennon, KMED.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
An intelligent solution saves you money. This is Randall at Advanced Air. It takes an expert to navigate the current HVAC rebates. Call Advanced Air to save big on equipment replacement. Advanced Air is currently offering an additional rebate on qualifying systems, up to $1,000 on Bryant mini split and crossover heat pumps. Some exclusions apply. Advanced Air and Bryant do whatever it takes to deliver intelligent heating and cooling solutions. Visit myadvancedair.com for details.
Your intelligent heating and cooling solution is at myadvancedair.com.
I'm Claudette Moore, former Medford City Councilperson.
My name's Terry Baker, and I'm the mayor of Phoenix.
I'm Dave Wright with CPM Real Estate Services, and I support Randy Sparacino.
I'm supporting Randy Sparacino.
I support Randy Sparacino for Jackson County Commissioner. I've known Randy Sparacino for several years. He was chief of police in Medford, now he's mayor of Medford, and he's doing a fantastic job running that city, keeping it safe, and helping as many people as he can.
Vote Randy Sparacino for Jackson County Commissioner. Paid for by Sparacino for Oregon, ID 20676.
Siskiyou Pump Service and Rotary Drilling Company provides water to Rogue Valley homes from field to faucet, including water filtration systems and service. Siskiyou Pump offers a free water test for hardness, iron, pH, and conductivity, and will offer a free no-obligation estimate on service or a new state-of-the-art filtration system if desired. We've been producing the most essential ingredient to your home for over 50 years, fresh, clean water. So if you have concerns about your water, call for your free water test and no-obligation quote. Visit SiskiyouPump.com.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
848. Get back to the phones here. Terry, you wanted to talk about an LCDC meeting you were at back in the 1980s. Or anyway, tell us about that. Set the table. It has to do with how, you know, the Valley became what it is right now.
Right. And speaking of all that farmland across from Crater High that's all developed.
Right.
Well, they were having a meeting, and this, like I said, this older gentleman, he was, had to be in his 80s, was pretty ill health. He was really struggling. And he had owned 40 acres that he grew alfalfa seed on for years. And they developed a lot of it all the way around him. And so he
tried to develop. He was getting old, couldn't farm anymore. He wanted to develop it. They wouldn't let him. Oh, no, that's prime farmland. So he was forced to sell it, and apparently a developer bought it. And within a year, they wouldn't let him do it, but they let a developer. It was totally full of houses. It was a housing tract, you know, and he and the LCDC people, they just kind of ignored him, you know. It was really sad to see what happened to the old guy.
You know, is it one of those things where, you know, the perhaps the older fellow could have kept a farm going with perhaps a portion of that land having been developed to be able to provide capital for the farming operation? I'm just curious if that could have worked.
Well, you know, I don't know. He got up and spoke, and the way he told it, that he tried to develop it, and they wouldn't let him.
Oh,
because
okay.
It was farmland, and yet the minute he sold it, because he was in real, he really struggled to walk and to get up there and do his speak. And so, you know, there's no way he could farm anymore. But he was forced to sell it, you know, because of his health.
I'm just wondering, though, how it was that he couldn't develop it, but yet someone else was allowed to, unless all of a sudden that land became part of the urban growth boundary again. I don't know.
Back then, there was no talk of, you know, I think it was in the works, but it was a long time after that before they ever moved the boundary. But
yeah.
That all in there is developed now.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Thanks for sharing that bit of history, your experience there. We go to Dave. Hello, Dave. You're saying watch out on your banking accounts, huh?
Yeah, watch out on your banking accounts. Because I had my debit cards to different situations where somebody charged pizza at a pizza place, a Ghost Pizza in Cleveland, Tennessee. And I've never been there.
You know something, Dave, you bring up a point here. You know, we're told that the reason you have to go away from cash is because cash is used in criminal enterprises all the time. That's the whole idea. To use cash is somehow akin to helping criminality. And yet, is it just me, or is there just as much crime, if not more crime, once they put it on the internet, the money?
I think it's more.
Yeah, I think so too. But your point well taken there. Very careful with those numbers. All right, 770-5633. Let me go to line 3. Hi, good morning. Welcome. Hello.
Bill.
Yeah.
Hey, Todd and Central Point.
Hi, Todd.
Now, we're less than a week away from the shutoff for comments about the jet boat rides. I think it cut off on the 15th.
Yes.
Did you post the contact information to who to write to online?
I think I did when I spoke with, was it Commissioner Roberts, I think, I spoke to about that? Yeah, that would have been, if that was last week, it would be in the last week podcast page. Maybe I'll just do a different post for it on the blog.
The cutoff's Tuesday, so if people have a good feeling about it, I think they should do it now.
Okay,
thank you.
Will do. Thank you, Todd. Appreciate that. 853.
Looking for a safe place to store your RV, trailer, or boat? Hardcastles offers a secure storage lot located conveniently on site with a keypad entry. With spots filling up quickly, stop by today to reserve yours. While you're there, check out the fully stocked line of enclosed, dump, flatbed, and utility trailers. Hardcastles friendly and experienced staff are always available to help you find what you need. Open weekdays 8:30 to 5, Saturdays 9 to 3. Hardcastles, where the customer is king.
If you have an appliance that's giving you trouble, Just-in-Time Appliance is your fast and affordable mobile appliance repair, serving the Rogue Valley. Just-in-Time services and repairs all brands. Major appliances often can be repaired, extending their life and saving you money. So give Just-in-Time Appliance a no-obligation call for advice on whether it can be fixed with the best warranty around. Before you go to the expense of buying a new appliance, call Just-in-Time Appliance online at justintimeappliance.com.
Well, you know it's Orly Stovin' Spas we both recommend.
Now I told you where, let us tell you why. You ought to stop and see our friend.
Hey, it's Lamont here from Orly's.
Now is the time to stop by to add warmth, savings, and value to your home with a Blaze King, the most efficient, longest-burning wood stove available. With a burn time of up to 40 hours, a Blaze King produces constant, thermostatically controlled heat for any size home. When you choose a Blaze King, you'll be saving big on your heating costs while burning less wood in one of the lowest emission stoves available. Beat the price increases and the weather now. Come into Orleans for a limited time and get a record-breaking 30% tax credit off qualifying wood or pellet stoves and installation. Orleans has the largest selection of qualifying units in Southern Oregon. And don't forget to ask us about our easy financing. Remember, Orleans is Southern Oregon's largest Cal Spas dealer at the corner of Delta Waters and Crater Lake Highway.
We're thrilled to announce we're back with our Veterans Metal Roof Giveaway. After the joy of giving away our first roof, we're honoring veterans with a free custom metal roof. One deserving veteran will win this amazing gift absolutely free. Don't delay. Enter now. The contest ends November 5th. Winner will be chosen on Veterans Day. Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc., where quality and community come together. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com for entries, details, and rules.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your tonneau cover source. Tonneau covers are a great way to secure and protect the cargo in your bed from the elements. Styles from Truck Gear, Mack Industries, Undercover, and more. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your one-stop accessory and protection shop.
Hi, I'm Riley with Rotary Drilling Company, and I'm on KMED.
Tom Petty. Song that probably caused more speeding tickets back in 1989, Running Down a Dream. I still love that. Love the sound of that. Always takes me when I was actually moving from Seattle to Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania, 1989. Leaving Seattle after a divorce and heading back there and Running Down a Dream is on the radio. Of course, you couldn't drive fast in the U-Haul, though. And I had an old 73 Volkswagen bus on the trailer behind me, though. Yeah, good times. Yikes. It's 8:56. Hey, Matt, how you doing this morning? Welcome.
Good. First of all, the best Tom Petty song ever.
Yep.
The best.
That's the way I look at it, too. Yep.
So you were talking, or you had one of your callers was talking about the debit card fraud and all that?
Yes.
Me, my wife, and my daughter's phones were lighting up at 6:30 this morning. They all got whacked for these petty charges. One was from Oldham University in the UK. One was for some other, looked like a handyman signal, and the other one was from some other small business. And so the local credit union, they're local in Oregon, caught all three and basically denied the charge. But here's what happened. So your cards get stolen, the numbers and everything. They get sold around the dark web. Then what happens is these hackers look for websites that are vulnerable. And when they find them, then they pump through $1, $2, which is what these were, charges, just to see if the tens of thousands of cards that they've stolen are still active. And so they start pumping them through these websites, and they can pump through in a couple of hours.
Oh.
They can pump through 50, 60,000 cards through somebody's website. So the merchant all of a sudden gets a warning saying, hey, you've got 5,000 charges for $1.16 here. What's going on? Are you doing this? No. So the vendor, like in this case, the college, they're going to get whacked for every single charge. And if they don't have fraud insurance, they're going to have to come up with the money out of their own pocket. But that's what happened this morning. So three small companies, three different card numbers,
yeah,
all were hacked. Not hacked today. They were probably hacked a month ago.
So in other words, watch your banking account right now. Go take a look at them, right?
Bill, if you have a credit card or a debit card and you do not have fraud alerts set to send you a text, you are a fool. Because this stuff is going on. Everybody's stuff has been hacked. Absolutely everybody. If you think, oh, well, I've never been hacked. No, you've been hacked. It's just a matter of when somebody gets it, finds the right website, and starts pumping through these $1 or $2 charges to find out if your card's good. And once they know your card's good, then they resell it. And they can get big money for it because they know that list of cards they're selling are active. People haven't caught on to the fraud yet.
All right. Very good. Hey, appreciate it. And, yep, I got fraud alert on mine, too. All right. Thanks, Matt. We'll talk more tomorrow, okay, on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And that's like a conspiracy right out there in the open. Be very careful with your accounts for sure. Be very careful also who you're dealing with when it comes to purchasing insurance, whether it's Medicare through, and this would be someone you want to talk with, Lynn Barton over at Sky Park, or you're talking about your regular car insurance, home insurance, life insurance, business transactions. I mean, all this kind of stuff. You still want to talk with Steve Yancey. Steve Yancey, Sky Park Insurance, good people to help you. To help you weather the storm of the amazing increases in the cost of insurance. Steve has helped save me a lot of money. He's helped a lot of other KMED and KBXG listeners save money, too. But you got to give him a shot at the business first. And it's really simple. You call him at 541-261-5444, 541-261-5444. Go to skyparkins.com. Sky Park INS, save some money. Steve Yancey.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
See you tomorrow.
Southern Oregon's place to talk. KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point, Medford, a bi-coastal media station.
It's 9 o'clock at KMED.